Look at that, 4th of July, huh?
Yeah.
It's weird, because people were letting off fireworks last night.
All weekend.
On July 3rd. Why is that?
Since it's on a Sunday and Monday, and then people have to work Tuesday, like, Sunday was the parties. But it's annoying. Like,
it's a weird day to fall on.
Sunday I'll give you, Monday I'll give you. Don't fireworks on Friday? Come on.
Yeah, somebody pointed out that 2020 was just fireworks all summer. Every day was just 4th of July. Nobody had anything to do.
Yeah. I mean, fireworks are, like, pretty cool if you think about it. It's nice.
Oh, fuck fireworks.
Well.
No, the show's not worth it. Unless you're at, like, a place, like a baseball game, and they let off fireworks.
Disney
fireworks.
Or
Disney, right.
Yeah.
That's fine. But don't put it in the middle of the street. Chairs on the lawn. I mean, that's very typical Long Island, but...
It's like,
I'm driving down the block, and they're fucking sweeping up the fireworks from last
night. I like when I'm driving, and I see fireworks in the sky. That's always nice.
Right, yeah. I just don't want to be near it, you know?
Yeah. See, fireworks are a weird thing because you can spend a lot of money on them and have, like, your own show, but, you know, your neighbors, they just get free shows. You know, you're kind of just doing it for everybody at that point.
Yeah.
We're here podcasting on the 4th.
Yeah, I'm glad that we opened our podcast with a nice talk about fireworks. Sure, no one's ever heard this type of conversation before. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Nerd Soup Podcast. I am Bo Oliver, joined here today with Aaron, the Nerd Soup Monkey, and we are back to talk about the world of Hollywood, movies, TV, some box office, some other stories. A lot of people excited about that Minions movie. You going?
Renting out a theater, right? Yeah, The Rise of Gru. Win and miss it.
Yeah, and you can listen to the podcast, obviously, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and of course on YouTube. And make sure you subscribe to our podcast channel, where eventually we will start uploading these podcasts to the channel. I think we've got 1.6 million subscribers, which
nice.
Is crazy.
Yeah. Wow, even more than
so
the main
much
channel.
We should probably start uploading there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, utilize that. It's big stuff. And follow us on social media at NerdSoup, BoSoup, NerdSoup, Monkey.
Instagram, Twitter, that's it.
4chan, that's just Teddy.
Yeah.
I've made that joke before.
Recycling
joke.
I always forget.
It's a holiday.
Sometimes I have a tweet, and I'm like, did I ever say this? I don't have a good memory. So then I have to go check the archives. It happens to me a lot.
Like, archives of your memory? What are you, Sherlock Holmes?
No, of my tweets.
Oh, okay.
And
I thought you had a mind palace.
I tried to make one. It's a little embarrassing, but
I did too. But they say
I looked
that
up
works.
On it, and it said it works. So
yeah,
I was trying to make my
works.
Own mind palace, and I couldn't do it because I was getting ready for a test. And I'm like, oh, let me try the mind palace thing. Didn't work. I did good on the test, but like just because I studied.
You cheated. Oh, okay.
It was just because I kept trying to
my mind palace,
trying to get these nuggets of information locked in my brain. But apparently, trying to make a mind palace also helps you remember things because you're constantly thinking of what you need to know on the test. So that
right.
was pretty nice. Back to Minions.
That is a dumb scene in Sherlock. Go ahead.
I love how their reaction to Baby Yoda and Groot were Baby Gru.
Baby Gru.
What a wild world we live in.
Listen, I can't get behind that meme. As funny as it may be, I hate those little fuckers so much.
They're the worst.
They're so annoying. There's nothing that... It's not so bad that it's good.
Waka waka.
The best part is the meme. Everybody pretending to like it. And it's funny. People have been comparing it to Morbius. They're like, how come... Execs must be ripping out their hair thinking, why didn't they
go
see Morbius?
People go see Minions.
Right,
kids
yeah.
Kids love Minions.
For kids,
I
parents,
actually met
families.
Somebody when I was talking... We were talking about movies.
You met a Minion? Oh, okay.
No, they hated the Minions, but they loved Gru.
Despicable Me 1 is still a solid movie. I can defend people who enjoy that movie.
So we're talking about like what's coming out later, like what's going on, what's in the theaters, and the Minions got brought up.
Has that person seen Top Gun? Because I'd love to get them on, get another
yeah, she did,
co-host
but she
with...
loved... She's
she?
She came... She's a Gru person. I don't know. Some people like the Minions, some people like the Grus.
It's funny because you're hiding your eyes behind the filter, so you're just a face to me. Just eyebrows and no mouth movement.
Come on, I'm short.
Well, you were hunching over a little bit.
I
fix
know.
Your posture. You know who's got great posture before we get into the topics? Adam Scott and Severance. I can't get over his posture sitting at that desk.
Posture does a lot. I tried
it's
to work
important.
On my posture. It's better. I have good posture now when I want to be. When I'm sitting, it's just who knows. But I remember when I was trying to like work on it, I was sitting and I was postured up like really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was like, oh, you have good posture. I'm like, thanks. It's like it's not a compliment you get often. When you do, you're kind of like, I like that.
I never get that compliment. I have terrible posture.
But I was actively trying to make my posture normal.
I'm destroying my neck. Yeah, it doesn't count. It's like when you're flexing, you know, like, oh, you're pretty ripped.
Yeah. That's what.
Or suck it in, you know.
I always go, like, into the gym, all the, like, the men's locker room, just a bunch of guys just flexing in the mirror. And that's cool and everything, but I'm also just trying to use the sink.
I am also trying to flex in the mirror. Please move over.
No, I save that for when I'm
all the spots.
Save that for me before the shower. I have to give a little, quick little. That's nice. But I don't get it, because obviously after the gym, like, you're all, like, pumped up and everything, and you're flexing. It's not how you're going to look like in... when you're going about your business. So
it's fun to imagine that, though. Let them have their fun.
No, I do. And I support my kings flexing in the mirror. But also, I got to wash my hands.
I watched a movie this weekend. One of the lines that stuck with me. Only the dreamers move mountains. All right, first topic here. We're talking Game of Thrones sequel series. This was big news a couple weeks ago when we talked about it on the podcast. I think most people were excited about this news. Others were a bit weary. You know, after season 8, everything that is announced involving Game of Thrones is going to be met with some hesitation. But this story, the reaction was more mixed. Because it was revealed that George R. R. Martin is not only involved in the series, but that it was pitched to him by Kit Harington's team. So this is something that's originating from Kit Harington, the Game of Thrones sequel, picking up where Jon Snow left off in the North with Tormund, with Ghost, doing some North stuff. I don't know what they do up there besides be cold and make fires. But George R. R. Martin will be involved. And like I said, the reaction was mixed because people are naturally going to say, well, where's the books? You know, not only has the show ended before you finish writing the books, but you're going to be a writer or a producer on a series that takes place after the show that was based on your books that are still not finished. And that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And I totally get that. I think that's a reasonable response. But at this point, George R. R. Martin is going to do what he's going to do. Even if it wasn't a Game of Thrones sequel series, he's going to find something else to occupy his time. He's proven that he's very good at that over the last 10 years, no matter what it is. He says he's not going to go to as many conventions. He still pops up. He says he's going to only focus on Winds of Winter. And then he's got another show or series that he's working on as well. So don't get your hopes up when it comes to these books anymore. I think we need to just accept that. No, we're still in denial about it, but at this point, even if they announced it, I think it's even hurt my excitement level. But if this is what he wants to do, I mean, having him, nobody knows the world better than him, right? So if there's a story to be told about the ending that he hasn't finished, I guess does he know, actually? I guess it would be him. I don't know. There's a lot of thoughts to have about this.
Well, yeah, I'm sure he has ideas of where Jon went after... I'm sure he has ideas of what Jon does after his ending, because I think he pretty much has the ending in his mind, and I think he definitely has thought about, like, just for fun, maybe, or maybe he even put something down on paper, but about where Jon ultimately ends up, and, like, what's his life like after the events of the series, but... I do think it's interesting that Kit Harington was the one who kind of brought this idea to HBO. It tells me that, like, you know, maybe...
he put all his money in cryptocurrency.
He missed getting those $7 million an episode checks. I would, too.
Yeah, it's not bad, right?
I just sat down with his agent. It's like, how can I make a lot of money?
Game of Thrones sequel, buddy.
He's like, God damn it,
back.
Son of a bitch, I'm in.
But he, you know, he was obviously one of the strongest defenders of season 8. And you can never expect an actor or a writer or a director to turn on something like that. Mixed response. I think there is a lot of stuff in season 8 that you can still be proud of if you're a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he always seemed like someone who was more tapped into the lore of the world. And he was one of the only cast members who actually read the books. So I guess from that angle, it's not that surprising, but it's more so just a positive note that it's a story coming from him rather than some HBO executive saying,
exactly,
let's just milk this out.
I think that's where the positive lies in the story, because if it's him coming up with, you know, it's coming from a place of passion or care, at least not like how we kind of speculated when we just got the news of this sequel series happening, that, like, oh, we need to, while it's still relevant, try to pump out as much Game of Thrones as we can, potentially to build off of House of the Dragon and kind of just keep going with this IP while it's still hot. This is more of, I think, you know, it comes from a place of Kit caring about the character of Jon. So that's exciting on that front. And with George, I mean, 6 years ago, I kind of had the moment where I was like, I'm like, I'm going to stop getting excited for this book. And when it comes out, I'll just read it then. But it just seems like it's, like you said, it's just never going to come out. And it's very upsetting. And I
well, Winds, I mean, it still feels years away. But the series as a whole is
Dream
never
of Spring
going to finish.
Is, yeah. Unless he's writing them concurrently and it's just almost ready as well, which I doubt. We're never going to get that book. Or as written by George R. R. Martin. Which fucking sucks, but... And I'm not one of these people that are like, he can't do anything else besides sit in a room and write. But also, at the same time, it's been this long. You've been getting promises and promises that haven't been delivered on. It's a bad look. Because obviously we don't expect someone to spend 24/7 on this project. But obviously there's not... There hasn't been an allocation of time spent working on this in a way that leads to... getting closer to publishing.
Yeah, I think where people get frustrated is
that...
It's
like, yeah, go to your convention on a Saturday, but Monday through Friday, write for a few hours.
Well, it's similar to politics, where you run on a platform and you say, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do, and then they get voted in and they're like, well, we don't have the votes for this. So you're running on things that people...
When does that ever happen?
You're running on things that people in your own party don't support. With George R. R. Martin, he kept telling us for years and years and years, I can do other projects, and I'm also going to finish Wins. And that was year after year after year. Obviously, he doesn't make those promises anymore because he's realized how many times he's put his foot in his mouth. But at this point, yeah, you kind of just have to accept it for what it is. I think hindsight is 20/20. If he had a do-over, he would have accepted earlier that I'm never going to finish this story in time. Let me put my focus on the TV show. Let me make sure D&D at least get this right as much as it can possibly be in terms of what I envision to be the ending of my novels.
Right, and I think when you think back to, like, why his involvement was less in the show was to focus on Winds of Winter, and here we are all these years later, and it's still not even out.
But dude, also writing Fire and Blood. Once again, you can't tell him what to do with his time, but is that really that important? That it feels like a book that should come after you finish the main books.
Yeah.
Fans have been so hard on him for so many years, but it looks like he's just going to continue doing what he wants to do. This does make me more excited for the series, because I think some of the best episodes of Game of Thrones were written by George R. R. Martin. Obviously, he knows how to adapt his own material, and he had his start in TV when it comes to Hollywood, so he was familiar with that medium of storytelling, and like I said, those episodes were really great. He's supposed to be involved in the House of the Dragon series. He's involved in a couple of these other spinoff shows. So he's got a full plate, man. And at this point, we still don't have Wins. We don't have anything close to an announcement. I mean, there's been nothing concrete about this book from publishers or from people who are going to be, you know, editors. You get like these breadcrumbs, but it always turns out to just be rumors or hearsay or people just speculating, blowing hot air. And when it comes to his blog posts, it's the same as usual. Yeah, I worked on a couple of chapters today. I struggled a bit, and then I didn't struggle, and that doesn't do anything for me. Because even if you go look at the timeline of his updates, you know, in 2013, I think we recorded a podcast that didn't come out, and you were breaking it down. You know, like 8-9 years ago, he was talking about like a quarter of the book is done, or a third of the book is close to being finished. So what the hell has happened? I need to, it is like misery. I don't want to kidnap him, but I just want to know. Like, in the middle of the night, I show up into his house dressed in all black, like rope from the ceiling type of shit.
Yeah.
Just like, tell me, what are you doing? Just what are you doing? Let me see the manuscript. Let me just see it.
What's on those hard drives?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. It's something where...
But I guess for the show itself, sorry to cut you off, I guess it's a good sign that he's on board with it, right? He
sure.
likes what he hears. I don't think he's ever going to come out and say anything negative. He never really has.
No.
Even when the show was kind of teetering a bit. You know, I think the most criticism he's ever given is that D&D are a bit more bloodthirsty.
Yeah. I think it's also, too, it's like, oh, what do people don't like? Oh, Bran being king, Daenerys being evil and then dying, Jon going to the north.
Yeah, he's definitely
that's
not.
That's what I have.
Well, he's also going to, that's the problem, right? He's going to dedicate probably way more time to Daenerys being evil. Maybe that's what he's struggling with, right? It's how do you bring that home? Because the Bells should have been, as a standalone episode, the Bells is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
if you had another season or two seasons of Daenerys making that turn, and there's obviously a lot of evidence that suggests that she was going to become the Mad Queen, but man, that would have been such a devastating moment in television history. And half the audience would have hated it for good reasons, though. It wouldn't have been, oh, we hate this because there was no development. It's like, oh, we love Daenerys, why would you do this? And I think people like us would have been like, ha ha ha, yeah, this is the subversion. You know, yeah. This is what he's been cooking up and setting up about the hero's journey. But damn, you know, just kind of sucks. It's something that, and we're not going to be done talking about this, especially with all these new shows coming out. You know, it's going to be on our minds. What could have been, you know, alternate histories and stuff like that, making ourselves miserable.
Yeah, it's weird too now, because you see like in other mainstream franchises, like, you know, Wanda had a kind of similar turn as Daenerys, as a character that's beloved, that had something happen to her and became, you know, blinded by it. And obviously some people consider Wanda a villain. That's their opinion. I don't think she is, but
oh, no, she is.
No, no, no. She's
she straight up murdered a man and widowed his his wife.
It's an alternate universe. It's barely even people.
Wow.
He doesn't exist. She hates that fan casting. She does all a favor.
She's like, you know what? If you were the one from the original,
yeah,
maybe I'd let you live.
Yep.
But fuck you. And fuck fan service.
But, yeah.
I love Wanda.
Obviously, it's all relative, right? Because Wanda really got a season of television dedicated to kind of that turn. Daenerys also got a season of television. I guess it's how it's done and if it's convincing to the audience. So,
yeah, and also I think that people were still upset with the Wanda switch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also Marvel. So you know that there's going to be something to redeem her. There's going to be some moment where she becomes a hero once again, back with the good guys, because she's too valuable as a character these days.
Mm-hmm.
They have to take that into account. A Wanda the Scarlet Witch movie would do numbers at the box office, dude. She's become such an icon. She's become the Joker for women. You're going to see it at Comic-Con.
That's Cruella.
Cruella, right. But you're already seeing it at Comic-Cons and during Halloween, the amount of fans who dress up as Wanda, the amount of people who love Wanda, stan Twitter, you know. So she's such a big character, you can't keep her evil forever. With Daenerys, it was more permanent. You know, this is the end, she's fucking dead now. But hey, maybe they bring her back, right?
Oh my god, she's fucking dead.
Oh my god, she's fucking dead.
Yeah, so I back to just, yeah. How did we even get on Wanda?
Talking about the turn. Yeah, I mean, we can move on to the next story here.
Just write faster.
Okay, yeah. George, you know what? You write faster, and I hope the show is good. Let's move on to U.S. weekend box office. So, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, Minions, The Rise of Gru.
A lot of people have been going out to see that. A lot of families.
A lot of college-aged men in packs wearing suits going to see this movie, so did pretty good at the box office. $108 million over the weekend. The holiday weekend. Number two. I mean, man, this movie just keeps chugging along. Top Gun Maverick made another $25 million.
I listened to a radio ad on the way here, and it was for Top Gun Maverick. And the,
still hasn't convinced you to go see it?
And it was like, it said one of the greatest movies of all time. Top Gun Maverick.
Why are you laughing?
I wasn't like... expecting that.
That's good marketing, right?
It is.
Best coffee. It's like an elf. Best coffee in the world.
My favorite are the terrible movies. The biggest movie in the world. Morbius is now number one. The number one movie
number
in the
one
world.
Movie in America. Technically, it was.
Yeah.
For a weekend.
So,
can you go see Top Gun, man?
I know.
Can you take Teddy and Nash? Be no. A nice bro movie. Why? Why'd you just dismiss that idea?
I have to go by myself.
I'm trying to get Teddy to watch the Mission Impossibles, so I send him the behind-the-scenes bit about the new stunts Tom Cruise is going to do in Mission Impossible 7. You know, typical Teddy, he responds with five paragraphs about how Tom Cruise should be paid more than other actors because he does his own stunts, and you hear it all the time, the criticism of actors because they don't do their own stunts. And I'm like, bro, just watch the fucking movies. All I'm trying to do is get you to watch the
right
movies.
Up his alley.
No, he's, you know how Teddy is. He moves on Teddy time.
I don't hate the, you know, it is a franchise I think has gotten increasingly better, but the first one's still like a classic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for, especially of the era.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like such a 90s spy movie.
Two is okay. Tandy Newton in that, by the way.
Two is bad. People don't want to say it because it kind of brings down the...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Tandy Newton.
Three... okay as well, but I think Philip Seymour Hoffman's very good in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he may be the best. It's not the best movie, but his performance as the villain might be the best Mission Impossible villain.
And four is when I think it starts to... and four is the Renner one, right?
Yeah, 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 it is.
So that's when they start, you know, getting a little
didn't
bit
he
better.
Die? He died, right? Or they just got rid of him?
I'm not sure.
Well, number three was Elvis with $18 million.
I was going to go...
$19 million.
I was, like, about to see Elvis, but it was 9 o'clock. I'm like, this movie's 3 fucking hours.
I might go today, depending on how much work I get done.
Yeah, that's when I have to go at like 2 o'clock.
Yeah, domestically, it's at $67 million, and worldwide, $113 million. So it's over its budget, and we'll see where that ends up. Jurassic World Dominion made another $15 million, and that's sitting on $828 million worldwide. Stop seeing those movies, people. Jesus
I refuse
Christ.
To see that movie.
I did see it, actually.
I might see it like in a couple weeks, but...
What are you, visiting a family or something? You know, you got like little nephews coming to town or something like that?
No,
little
just brother. Like...
Well, why are you seeing it in a couple of weeks?
That's I have
a
to
weird
see it
timeline.
Eventually, but I'm not going to see it before I see Elvis and Top Gun.
Okay.
But
and the Black Phone.
And then Thor's coming out next week, too.
I'm excited for Thor.
We're both going to be away for Thor. I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah. You have to send Nash and Teddy on that one.
Well, I'm going to be in fucking Greece, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to go to the movie theater and... Do they speak English?
Oh, I think they have movie theaters in English, yeah.
Okay.
Don't go to the movies while you're in Greece. Just wait to come back home and see it.
But Zeus is in it, so it kind of makes sense.
I hear he's a prick in it, too.
Yeah, so... No, I'm not going to, like... I don't want to get spoiled, though. I could go Friday.
I already read the leaked plot.
Well, I feel like that'd be cool. Hanging with the Grecians, watching some Thor.
Bro, just go see the sights, man. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You're like the person who goes to Italy and goes to dinner at McDonald's.
I do. I want to try the foreign things that I know. You know, like McDonald's.
Okay.
See how they differ.
Yeah, number five was the Black Phone, which made another $12 million, and that's sitting on close to $80 million worldwide already. So, Blumhouse, man, they just know how to pump out these movies that make money. I think this is under $20 million to make. So I don't think it's going to slow down. I definitely think it's going to go over $100 million. It won't be the first movie from Blumhouse to cross that mark. Very impressive. And I think it was a solid horror flick. But Top Gun Maverick, I mean, being the first movie starring Tom Cruise to pass $1 billion, so impressive.
I mean, that's really a movie that even the most popular franchises have their detractors. But it just seems like everybody loves Top Gun.
Yeah. You're seeing, I mean, I've seen some criticisms, but not much. Yeah, mostly people are just enjoying it for what it is.
Do you
the
know,
action sequences are when, incredible.
When the original Top Gun came out, I think enrollment for the Air Force went up, like, astronomically.
I think so. I think we'll see something similar.
Because...
It's unintentional military propaganda.
I tell you what, though, it works.
The propaganda?
It just seems cool.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%.
Well, when you get there, you're like, oh, this fucking sucks.
Dude, even Brooklyn Nine-Nine, people were buying NYPD hoodies because they just loved Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
It's a funny show.
Right.
But, like,
and I
it's
think
just cool.
It's funny because they try and do their best to not make it propaganda, but it always will be.
I watch Hacksaw Ridge, and I'm like, I don't want to do that.
That's a good point,
that
actually.
That terrible. Top Gun, I'm like...
That's anti-war.
Top Gun, I'm like, hell yeah.
Right.
This is guys being dudes.
It is a guys being dudes movie. The funniest tweet was that Tom Cruise, after all these years, returned to the Top Gun franchise to hand the baton to a new generation of Tom Cruise. It really is that. He still looks cool. You know, he's obviously in great shape for being 60 years old. All my mom's friends were talking about how handsome he still is. It's like, well, you know, when you have the money and the nutrition
and the
surgeries. Yeah, the Scientology and the surgeries. But... If Tom Cruise's first movie to cross over $1 billion, and it is impressive because it's not a Marvel movie or a typical franchise movie. Obviously, you had the one original Top Gun 30 years ago. But I think a lot of people, when this was announced, said, we don't need this. Mm-hmm. Why would Tom Cruise do this? Why isn't he focusing on some of these other franchises that he has that are doing really well? And then he put all of his Tom Cruise creativity into this and updated it for the modern day. And it is very similar to that original one, but it's just bigger. It's just mm-hmm. better. It's just more crisp. And like you said, a lot of people just like this movie. Good word of mouth. People going back to see it multiple times.
The olds are coming out.
The olds.
The olds is a big movie for Top Gun.
But it's old school, you know? It's like you need to go see that new Tom Cruise picture. And that's the difference between...
My parents want to go see Top Gun. They don't go to the movies whatsoever.
Definitely.
I don't remember the last time they've ever wanted to go to the movies. I think last time I went to the movies, I went with my mom and we saw Rocket Man.
That sounds like a movie for that generation as well. Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm sure she saw. Yeah. Did she see Hacksaw?
I think she might have, but like on TV. I think, what was I going to say? Oh, fun facts. A nickname for one of my college roommates, like he called me, was Goose. So that's very Top Gun.
You know, he dies in the first one.
I know, but you know when you make a 2K My Player?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that
yeah.
That was one of the nicknames. I'm going to pick Goose. So he just called me Goose.
I always used to pick the mayor. All right, let's move on to the next story here. We're talking James Bond, so we got some insight about what they're planning for the...
I fucking suck, man. I couldn't even pick the main character. Pick fucking Goose.
For the reinvention of the James Bond franchise. So the head producer, Barbara Broccoli, the Broccoli family has been controlling James Bond for many, many decades now, said that they're still years away from shooting, and she can't imagine that a new Bond movie will release before 2025. And that they
Take
are working
your time.
To, yeah, they're taking their time. There's no script, there's no directors, there's no writers, there's no nothing. And obviously, I think whenever you do hand the torch over to a new actor, you have to reinvent the character. You have to find a new way to keep this character interesting. And I think that they should take inspiration from other blockbusters, especially a franchise like Mission Impossible. But also the Marvel movies as well. If they want to open this thing up to series and shows and different tie-ins, plan it. Don't go headfirst into it like DC did, mm-hmm. where you're just throwing shit at the wall and hoping it sticks. And I think that the Broccoli family and obviously the producers of James Bond, now moving over to Amazon, have shown patience and they've shown a true commitment to getting the best out of this franchise. Not all the movies are always great. They hit or miss. But for the most part, they are good.
I think 2025 is still a little soon, don't you think?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I guess last year was No Time to Die, right? So 4-year turnaround, it does feel quick.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had such great success financially with these last three, so I can understand why there may be a bit more pep in their step.
And it's
get it back out there.
It always gets the buzz going on picking a new Bond alone. Yeah, I think like 2028. And the thing is, too, everyone now has in their
2028.
Head. 2028? Like, ooh, this, he should be Bond.
Zion will be at Nick by then.
I know.
I hope I'm alive.
So, what was I saying? Oh, yeah.
New Bond.
You know, everyone's like, oh, Richard Madden should play Bond. Maybe he should play Bond.
Love that.
But by if it's a few years down the road, who knows who's like hot and relevant.
Right. I mean, it always felt too good to be true.
Austin
Idris Elba
could be Bond.
I hope not. Isn't he American?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know anymore.
He could be British.
The choice for
me is Idris Elba.
No, he was on Disney Channel. I don't know why that can't make him British, but it just doesn't seem right.
Miley Cyrus is British.
Does that make sense? I feel like that makes sense in my head.
I
it's like Disney,
like...
they get the all Americans.
No, the butler from Sweet Life of Zack and Cody was British, wasn't he?
But he was a side character.
Oh my God, just dismissed him.
Anaheim.
That checks. Yeah. Austin Butler from Anaheim.
He was in Zoe 101. Yeah, no way he's British.
Yeah, I mean, the other actors... that have the best odds, Tom Hardy, Henry Cavill, Bridgerton's Reggae Jean Page, and like you mentioned, Richard Madden. And I think there have been other names out there. You know, Damian Lewis has been a name for a long time as well. Idris Elba is the big one.
Miles Teller's grandma will melt your heart with her campaign to make him be Bond. I would...
You don't think Miles Teller has that in him?
Is Miles Teller British?
No. Miles Teller can barely talk in an American accent, let alone a British one. I can't imagine. That's going to be the Ben Affleck and Family Guy. Oh, I have to be King Richard in a few hours. Hello, hello. Hello.
Here's GQ India's top 10 contenders for the Bond. 1, Idris Elba.
Right.
2, Tom Hardy.
Okay.
3, Roger Jean Page.
Okay.
4, Henry Cavill.
Mm-hmm.
5, Sam Heughan. This is from Outlander.
Not familiar with him.
Number 6, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Would love that.
Yeah, it's not bad. I never. 7, Nicholas Hoult. That would be fucking awesome.
Still relatively young.
Let's see. 8 is Papa Isudu. Papa. He was the boyfriend in Men.
Okay.
Yeah. 9, Robert Pattinson. I don't think he'd be Batman. And Tom Holland. Okay, now we're getting ridiculous here.
I think Robert Pattinson could do that.
Cillian Murphy, Riz Ahmed, and that's 12.
Idris Elba is closing in on 50. Still doesn't matter to me. I think he's still got it. When you look at that man on screen, he's still got all the charisma, all the charm, all the handsomeness of a leading man. And he's proven that he can play a character like Bond. He would be so good, man. Dressing him up in those fresh-ass suits. The physicality he would bring to that role, carrying over that from Craig, because Craig's Bond was just so gritty. You know, it wasn't about outsmarting your opponents. It was about stuffing them in a fucking locker and then saying, oh, I could have probably gotten some information out of that guy. I shouldn't have killed him.
You know, canonically, Bond is 5'6".
In the novels?
Nah, I just made that up. That would be pretty fun.
Well, in the novels, I know, I haven't read any of them, but I know he's supposed to be this unassuming, unattractive type of blunt weapon. So obviously in Hollywood, they completely reinvented that. You know, first Bond, Sean Connery.
First off, ill. Second, ew. We're just going to scratch all this.
That's why I've always wanted like a real Bond movie that wasn't a Bond movie. You know, you get someone like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an actor.
Miles Teller.
Well, Miles Teller's still too handsome. You know, a guy who's just an average looking guy, but ripped, you know, like he's the fixer. You send him in, you send in Bond when you need a trigger pulled, you know, that type of guy. That's never going to go. But I think that Craig, even though Craig's a good looking man, but he had a lot of that to him, where he wasn't 6'2", you know, he's 5'9", 5'10", average height. He wasn't, you know, the most charming, but there was still charm there to him. And like I said, he was just so brutal with the way he would fight and take on his enemies. So Idris Elba, you get the best of both worlds. You know, you go back to the traditional tall, handsome, suave, but he's going to beat the fucking shit out of people as well. And I've heard people suggest Henry Golding, Crazy Rich Asians, the Gentleman. I think he'd be good too, man. He's got a lot of charisma to him. I could see him as Bond. Can you envision them in the suit? Tom Holland would be a fucking disaster.
Yeah. Tom Hardy. I don't get Tom Hardy. He doesn't strike me as Bond. He strikes me as the guy you said, the guy, you know, the unassuming guy who comes in, like him, like that Jason Statham type. But I don't think that's Bond necessarily. Henry Golding, like,
that's Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's out of all the people on this list, and I think Regé Jean.
Yeah, people like him.
From Bridgerton. Yeah, he's got a lot of that sort of old school, classy suaveness to him, you know, like the 60s and 70s Bond. Maybe they go back to the Roger Moore movies where he's just a horny devil. You know, it's just fun-loving, Austin Powers type.
Yeah, I mean, Bond's got to fuck.
They're getting away from that. They don't like Bond fucking anymore.
I mean,
he's fucked enough, huh?
No. Not for Bond.
All right, let's move on to the last story here. We have news about Dune Part 2 sets production for later this year.
That'd actually be pretty dope, actually. If he was just like, nah, I don't have sex anymore. Had too much.
I'm asexual now.
Buddy.
Just focus on the grind.
Yeah, it doesn't even register for me anymore. Wow, that guy's cool.
It's like when Will Smith said he had so much sex he was throwing up. That's going to be Bond. Yeah, so Dune Part 2 will apparently begin production July 21st. Recently, the release date was pushed back a single month from October 20th, 2023 to November 17th, 2023. And we also had news about a new casting. Leia Sado will be playing Lady Margot, who is another member of the Bene Gesserit, who is married to one of the advisors of Emperor Shaddam. We talked about Christopher Walken being cast as Emperor Shaddam, and obviously Florence Pugh as Princess Irulan, his daughter. But Leia Sado, I mean, she's just one of those. She's not a household name. She's not an A-lister, but she's great in everything. Why are you laughing?
I'm just thinking in my head of Austin Butler still doing his Elvis accent to film Dune. Gotta get the spice.
We need to torture the Freemen. They mean nothing to us. They mean everything to us. Has everything to do with us.
Oh, Paul Atreides.
Paul Atreides. He's good, man. I like Austin Butler.
Yeah, because people were like,
I'm excited for Elvis
because he was still doing his Elvis accent in interviews.
And he's like, well, fuck off. Now I don't like him anymore.
What do you mean?
That's so annoying.
No. I don't think he was doing it on purpose.
Okay.
I think, like, just some things for staying in character, like, just stuck. And I guess certain inflections stuck a little.
I could see that, actually. So, like, yeah, I like him again.
Like, you know, Christian Bale did all of his American interviews in American accents for Batman, which I respect. Respect America. If you're going to play Batman, don't flaunt your Britishness in our face. Especially
his American accent was so good that he was straight up convincing people, oh, this guy's just American
for years.
Every time
he does a thing, like in like a award speech, everyone's like, he's British. He's actually Welsh, so.
Is he really?
I don't know. I think so.
He speaks with a pretty British accent. There's no way that's Welsh.
It's the same thing, I think. I don't get the United Kingdom. It confuses me.
Anthony Hopkins is Welsh.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a bit more velvety.
Garrett Bale's Welsh, right?
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at me.
That bum never wins any... Well, Britain never wins cups anyway, so it doesn't matter. But yeah. Look at me. I don't get the United Kingdom. Then you knew one guy was Welsh, and all of a sudden you're a historian. No, there's a...
Let me tell you about the War of Roses. Which I only specifically know about because of the Red Wedding.
But I was surprised to see, I don't know why it caught me by surprise, because I feel like I've read this information before, but 2023, man, that's right around the fucking corner. I mean, this time next year, it's going to be Dune Part 2 Fever.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
And that movie's going to be...
It seems like it's lost steam a little.
Well, that happens. Yeah. I think even movies like, or even, you know, it happens to shows a lot, where it comes out and makes a splash. It wasn't that big of a hit, but I think it was big enough to satisfy all the fans who were afraid that there won't be a sequel or it's going to bomb. It's going to be a catastrophe. So making your 400, 500 million, that's solid.
I hope they do a re-release.
I think a re-release would be nice. But part two, I mean, we'll see if more people watch it at home, watch it on HBO Max, heard the word of mouth, you need to check out this movie, and even more people come out for part two, and it makes maybe 600, 700 million. You can dream 800 million. I think it's going to be so action-oriented that it will possibly do significantly better than Part 1 at the box office, especially if you get the push not only from their marketing team but from fans. Because I think the fans of Dune did such a great job of getting the word out there for a long time, where it became a community. Like, this could be our next big thing that we can all get involved in and talk about and speculate and dive into the world together. So we'll see how Part 2 does.
Yeah, I mean, leading up to the first Dune, man, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it was so much fun.
Like, getting the opportunity to see it early and everything, that was like one of like the most fun I've had going into a theater.
Yeah, me too, man.
Like, it wasn't the same as, like, obviously, oh, Endgame, you know, all this build up and all the movies and what's going to happen. It was more like just the hype was just the movie itself.
Yeah.
And, oh, man. If it delivers on this part two, it's going to be considered, I think. So I think that people have their issues with part one, but for the most part, I don't think there's anybody who, like, hates Dune. There probably are.
No, there are people out there. It's boring, it's slow, but you're always going to get that when it comes to a Villeneuve movie.
So I think part two, especially if it's going to be more of a little...
accessible.
Fast pace.
Yeah, mainstream.
People already know what to expect in terms of coming off of the first one. So I'm excited.
I'm excited too. All right. Well, before we move on to fan questions, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor for this podcast, and that would be Storyblocks. Right now, you can click the link in our description box below. And this is a good opportunity for anyone who's interested in content creation, whether you're making videos on YouTube or if you're making videos for your small business. Storyblocks is dedicated to making it easier for independent creators to bring their stories to life without sacrificing the quality of your video due to time, budget, or resources. This is what makes Storyblocks so great. With one of their affordable subscriptions, you will receive unlimited downloads for all of the content in the Storyblocks library. They have stuff like templates for softwares like After Effects, or things that you can use in all the major Adobe products, stock images, graphic designs, background footage. They also have royalty-free music, so you can give your video some cinematic flair, or if you want something to serve as background music while you're narrating. The options in their library feel like they're unlimited. They have a very easy search bar that you can just type in specifically what you're looking for, and they give you dozens and dozens of options. And the Storyblocks library is royalty-free, so all of the things that you download when you're a member of Storyblocks are yours to use as many times as you like. So consider signing up to Storyblocks with one of their affordable subscriptions by clicking the link in our description box below. All right, now let's move on to fan questions. Let's hear that music.
That's for the fan to decide.
Yay!
People, you call up to the show, you better be ready. That's what you're supposed to do. Sitting there arguing and trying to spell your name and all of this other stuff. It's not your show, it's my show. I'm giving you the opportunity to speak your mind. Don't call up here unless you got something to say.
This question here from Adelaide. What are your thoughts on fan theories and audience expectations of big franchises? To what extent do they help the projects and fan communities, but also how do they bring about their own pitfalls?
It happens a lot, and I think it depends on the fan base itself. Fan theories are fun. I engage, I speculate, I look up things, and it's fun to read, and I think there's nothing wrong with, like, you know, trying to connect some dots and kind of be like, oh, this nugget of information that I saw in one movie, you know, led me to maybe connect some other dots, and now this is going to happen in this movie. That's fun and all, but if it doesn't happen, that's where I think the issues stem from, because then people are upset when their fan theories either don't come true or whatever we see is such a divergence from what we thought was going to happen that we just hate it on that basis alone. And that's annoying. I think obviously with Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Marvel is where you see like the most of this. And as long as people are having fun with it, then I have no problem. But it's when, you know, my theory doesn't come true, so this is garbage. That's when it becomes like a little toxic.
Yeah, and I think that's always been a part of movies and anticipation of movies, what it's going to be, what I think it's going to be. And sometimes if your expectations aren't met, not only from quality standpoint, but just from a storytelling standpoint, people can be frustrated with that. I think the internet, YouTube, all of these fan communities online have amplified those people who get upset when their certain ideas don't come true. And a lot of people are making money off of fan theories and predictions and speculation. So it comes down to, I want to defend these predictions and theories that I made because my reputation's on the line.
Well, like, we made theory videos before, and obviously Ray Palpatine, pretty sick. You know, we've made things that didn't come true necessarily, and I just had fun talking about them. They don't have to come true for it to be. And if they don't come true, sure as hell don't want people to be like, oh, you losers, your fear theory didn't come true. Well, that's why it was a fan theory. We're just having fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, I've never taken that personally.
Except for Ray Palpatine, you predicted that, and that's fucking dope, and everyone should recognize that.
Yeah, go watch that video.
yeah, it just depends. Like, and I think it's also skewed people's expectations, so that kind of sucks. I saw one review for Doctor Strange before it came out. If you're expecting cameo, like all these crazy cameos, you're going to be disappointed. I mean, since then you see the movie, Captain Carter, fucking Mr. Fantastic,
what?
Black Bolt.
No way.
Patrick Stewart.
Huh?
That's not crazy. Like, for me, that's kind of pretty nutty.
They should have hit that in the trailer.
Yeah.
That was a misstep.
But, like, how has that not become crazy cameo? Like, that's the standard now? Like, where that's, like, you know, lower your expectations on cameos? I thought that was too many.
And a lot of that's happening on social media. People in the real world were mostly shocked by those cameos. Or for a lot of people, it was, who the hell is Black Bolt? I recognize the bald guy from X-Men. These other people, I have no idea who they are. Some of the people who didn't see Captain Marvel or, you know, they can recognize that that's Mr. Fantastic from the fucking suit and the stretchy powers. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where it just is what it is. You know, you open Pandora's box and
the movie, that seems so funny now when I think about it. Because it's very much, here's Mordo, just the way he presents them is solely for applause
for the
in
audience.
Theaters.
Yeah.
Here's Captain Carter.
Captain Carter. Yay. And the leader of the Fantastic Four. Mr. Fantastic.
Hello, hello.
Oh my God, it's John Krasinski. This question here from Russ at Rusty. What's up, Russ? Hakeem or Shaq, 1v1 to 11, who's winning? Oh, Hakeem's going to fuck him up in a 1v1. I mean, obviously Shaq's going to have a chance. Shaq was good in the post, good footwork. He obviously has the weight advantage over Hakeem. But bro, Hakeem is going to have that man experiencing vertigo in the post. That boy was so nice in the post. His footwork, the moves, the fakes, the touch. He doesn't get enough respect, man, and I'm guilty of that as well. Whenever I make a top 10 list, I always have Hakeem on the outside looking in, and to a lot of people, that's fucking blasphemous.
Well, that's like a fun, like when we talk about like Jordan's draft, like how he fell to the Bulls, it's never like, no one ever blames Houston.
No. They got two titles out of it.
They got fucking, yeah. It was like, they didn't miss on Jordan.
And they did a poor job building teams around him for the first half of his career. It wasn't until Jordan left that they happened to get a championship team around him. You know, I don't think there was any other All-Stars on that team. It was a lot of great role players like Kenny Smith and Robert Horry, and what they did to the Magic, and unfortunately what they did to the Knicks. One chance at a title in the 90s, man, and John Starks fucking blew it. But I think Shaq may be the better 5v5 center. I think all time Shaq is better than Hakeem, but 1v1, it's so different.
Like, yeah, you take the ball from the top of the key, you know? It's like, if you were there starting in the post, maybe it'd be like a different story, but I don't know, that's tough, because Shaq also has very good footwork and gets... I don't think people understand how skilled he was, because he was just so big and strong.
Yeah, a lot of that gets forgotten. Some of those highlight videos are incredible to watch. He was just such a specimen to be at that size and to be that light on his feet. Skip Bayless always calls him a dancing bear, and I think that's the perfect description of what Shaq was. Like I said, I think all time Shaq is better, and 1v1 is much different than 5v5. Mm-hmm. It's a different game. This question here from Alex Posniak, best side dish at a barbecue, macaroni and cheese, not even close.
Everything I've known about barbecues has gotten... It's changed since the internet era. Growing up, it was hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill. That was a barbecue.
Right.
Now you got cookouts, and that's a whole different story. And there's barbecues, which is just like smoked meats. You know, you bring hot dogs and hamburgers. Like, you're not having a barbecue. So I don't know what it is anymore.
Well, our yearly barbecue, the Father's Day barbecue, is just... they make lobster some years. They make steak some years. Yeah. We roasted a pig one year.
I don't like that.
No, yeah.
Delicious, but...
Like, Teddy had a barbecue a few weeks back, and he posted his spread. It was disgusting. The driest mac and cheese, the worst-looking hot dogs, the worst-looking burgers, chips that he got from the store as sides. And he was posting... Like, he did the whole, like pan the camera and show off the spread. Yeah. I left it alone. I didn't want to argue with him.
I want to get into like smoking meats and stuff. So I always see it on like TikTok and I'm like, that looks delicious. But you know, like the easy way is just the hot dogs and hamburgers. I think a lot of people unfairly shit on potato and macaroni salad.
Yeah, I
think
like
those
both
are delicious side options. Mac and cheese, it's just on another level. If we're talking like barbecue, like South type smoke houses, mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, okay, but mac and cheese is just the staple. It goes good with everything. I like how now Thanksgiving mac and cheese is becoming more of a traditional side dish, and I like that. I don't think I've had mac and cheese at Thanksgiving growing up, but recently we've been doing mac and cheese. Still not there yet, but...
It's so funny. Whenever I tell people that we have rice at Thanksgiving, they're like, what? Rice at Thanksgiving? That's crazy. But we also do rice at the barbecues. I don't know. That's not a side, but...
Rice?
I guess it is a side. It is a side. But our barbecues literally have... You can get anything at our... You can get baked ziti. You can get fried chicken. The spreads at the Father's Day barbecue are just incredible.
I'll hold. Fried chicken is probably one of the best foods ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's who doesn't love fried chicken?
It's like, and it's just so many different ways. You can obviously have fried chicken tenders, the pieces, fried chicken sandwich. We need a holiday based around that fried chicken.
Right. Let's just replace a turkey with fried chicken.
Oh, Thanksgiving would be so much better.
This question here from Cole. Why is Stranger Things so bad? Or why was Stranger Things so bad? Well, I've seen a lot of people... seem to like it, especially these last two episodes. I've heard
differing opinions on the last two. I haven't seen them yet.
Good blockbuster television.
Yeah. I have a 15-hour flight, so I think I'm going to save that for that. I need some flight movies.
I think when it comes to Stranger Things for me, it's like a going to Six Flags or an amusement park. I like roller coasters. I'm sure I'd have fun if I went, but I don't have the energy for it. I don't want to prepare. I don't want to take the drive. I don't want to walk around and count my steps. Look how many steps we got in. Do I get the fast pass? Do I not? It just seems like such an ordeal. And the kids, there's just something about the way people talk about this show that just annoys me. Like you were talking about, oh, Wanda ate this scene, million retweet. That's Stranger Things is the epitome of that. Like everyone does, all the kids deserve an Oscar for this scene. And wow, I can't believe Stancy's back on the table. And it's just, oh. And I've, the Stranger Things humor has always been so hit or miss, but I've heard that it's
when
really
Finn
bad.
When Finn Wolfhard did that.
Yeah, yeah. Can you believe what they've done to the character of Mike? Yeah, yeah, it's just a picture of Finn Wolfhard, yeah. I like Dustin. Maybe I'll watch it for Dustin.
We joke around about that stuff, but it's fun to see the fan base, like, you know, because we always talk about it, a show that kind of just dies after it comes out. So having some staying power, people enjoying it, that's all well and good. And I think this last season has been really good. I haven't watched part two yet, but I think it's delivered. So it's not like we're talking, what's that show Teddy watches?
Supernatural.
Right. It's not, maybe it's good, but it's not like a middling show that people are overhyping to such a large extent. Because I think for the most part, it is a very good show.
You're like, what's that stupid show Teddy watches that I've never watched?
Yeah.
We're just going to call that mid.
Yeah, it seems like it is.
CW, it's been running for like 15 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can't be good. I'm sure that there are seasons that are good, but there's no way a show runs that long and it's actually good. The only show that's ever accomplished that is probably South Park, and that's because that's all those guys do.
I was contemplating turning my Twitter account into a parody account and just not telling anybody. I think I might just the most random fucking things on TV and movies. Just be like... I'm trying to think of like one right now. What's like the most showy show out there? What's like CBS's newest drama?
Oh, okay. Rookie. Like The Good Doctor.
Yes.
Yeah. You just could become a Good Doctor, Stan. Yeah.
The way the good Doctor did that surgery.
Did that.
Emmys,
Oscars, Tonys, Grammys.
Young Sheldon ate that shit up.
Yeah. No, Young Sheldon, they'd be able to see through it. It has to be. No, it would be funny if Supernatural, I think it's done, but if it was still running and that was Teddy's whole Twitter account, just week to week Supernatural bits.
And I bet you I'm never going to have heard of the show before, and it's going to be like the number one show in America. CBS. What's The Offer?
That's the show about the making of The Godfather.
Oh, that actually is pretty cool.
I've heard mixed things about that, but I think more leaning towards the positive.
Yeah, like Bull. You hear Bull?
Never heard of Bull.
It was a guy from NCIS. He became...
Oh, of course.
He's in his own show.
He's also the guy from Criminal Minds, right?
Yeah. They actually filmed Bull next to my... Like, right by one of my ex-girlfriend's apartments. And we would go, and there was like a CBS Bull, and everything was Bull around.
Mm.
And I never checked it out. But it would always fuck up parking, because this parking was reserved for Bull. So, out of spite, I'll never watch that show. But I will stan it on Twitter. The way Bull... Full sees through your bullshit.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a couple more questions here, and then we'll wrap it up. This one here from Oakley B. What are you looking to snag for the Barnes & Noble Criterion sale? Well, I went day two of the Criterion sale. Said it was going to limit myself to under $100. Only spent $60 worth on these Blu-rays. I picked up Tarkovsky's Mirror.
Nice. Good Sam is another CBS drama. Starring Jason Isaacs.
I love Jason Isaacs.
The way he eats and Good Sam.
He should have got an Oscar for Harry Potter. Just because he was a dick to Harry Potter and fuck Harry Potter, right? He's a dick to everyone else. He
deserves
to be bullied.
Everyone makes fun of Voldemort for having beef with a child. Fuck Harry.
I also picked up Moonstruck starring Cher and Nicolas Cage. Never seen that before, so I was like, I should just buy this on Criterion. And then I bought The Tragedy of Macbeth by Roman Polanski. So when I posted that on my story, I got some people looking at me sideways. Listen, the guy's a total fucking scumbag.
No.
He's been in hiding for years, so he knows he's a fucking scumbag. But Rosemary's Baby is one of the best ever. Apparently this one's pretty good as well. And I love Macbeth, so I always like to see different directors' versions
of
that story.
You're more of a Macbeth guy.
It's more for Macbeth than for Polanski.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's tough. Because, I mean, even... I think, like, Woody Allen has some good movies. I don't think that's, like... It's not, you know... If I'm watching Midnight in Paris or Blue Jasmine, I'm not doing it for, you know, because it's Woody Allen. I just like... I think those are good movies, and I think the cast is good and stuff.
People are always so quick to blame everyday people instead of the corporations and the people in power who have been protecting these individuals for decades mm-hmm. and who only recently started to condemn them and not work with them and ostracize them from Hollywood. So it's taken a very, very long time. They just let them make movies after movies with huge stars. I mean, how many stars co-signed Woody Allen throughout the years? That's what it was. If you're going to work with him for a 3 to 6 month shoot, promote his movies and talk about how brilliant he is, that's a cosign.
Yeah.
And you can't erase that. So when I rent a Woody Allen movie or watch a Polanski movie and people are like, how can you support that? It's like, it wasn't up to me.
Yeah.
It's like these decisions were made a long time ago. So the ink is dry.
No, it's
but I'll let people know if it's good. This question here from the Jess Notebook. What's your favorite retro video game? For me, it's Banjo-Kazooie.
Is that when I think retro? I think like Tetris, Space Invaders, Pong.
Oh, man, those Nintendo games are going on 30 years old.
Yeah,
you just don't want to admit it.
That's crazy. Yeah.
You're holding on to your childhood. I think at this point, yeah, they're retro. But Tetris, I used to love too. I mean,
Tetris is.
I love some of those. I think you can include those Super Nintendo games as well. I used to love Donkey Kong on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, maybe like the original Mario's and Pong. That's crazy. That's just crazy to think about. Like back in the day, it's like you want to get ran on the sticks and you're playing fucking Pong.
Yeah. We've come a long way.
Like, oh man, now it's 2K. It's crazy.
This question here from Mob_Chef. Would the Soup Boys ever consider doing reaction content? Boost those numbers, baby. We've done it in the past. No, it's just.
I'll say this. Like if a trailer comes out for the new Game of Thrones series. The Jon Snow.
Right.
We're going to talk about it, but I don't feel comfortable, or I don't like watching the... Here we go. Hey, welcome to Nerd Soup. I'm Matt, the Nerd Soup Monkey. Look what we got here today. The new Game of Thrones, Jon Snow, sequel... See, I can't even speak. Sequel trailer for the first time. Here we go. Is that Jon?
Wow.
Is that Jon?
That's
Jon Snow. Ghost! Oh, ghost! Let's go!
Yeah,
That's Tormund. Tormund. Yo, what is that? Is that the Night King? No, it's not the Night. It's a White Walker.
This is great. I'm just gonna put this over when the trailer comes out. Just keep going, because I'm sure all of these things are going to happen. I wanted to try and review Stranger Things just based on what I read off Twitter, because I felt like I could do like a 5 to 10 minute non-spoiler review that people will be satisfied with.
There's a review on this channel of X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I didn't see the movie. And I just reviewed it based on what I thought it was going to be.
Those were the old days.
And for the most
part... The good old days.
I was keeping up.
No, especially when it's non-spoiler, and if you're on Twitter and you get other people's reactions, it's very easy to do. Be like, man, all of the original cast was great this season. I think the way they've grown, the emotional maturity, I think that some of the decisions they've made with Mike are questionable. I don't know if that really works, so carrying over from season 2 Mike to season 4 Mike.
Yeah.
But overall, the cast was incredible. And, you know, building up this new character, you love him, and then they kill him off. What the hell is that about?
One of the scariest villains.
The practical
of all time.
Effects, voice, and Kate. I know Kate Bush is loving all this money. She's stacking it. Yeah,
and yeah, Sadie Sink too. Whoa, what an incredible performance!
Dear Billy.
Oh,
Dear Billy.
God, did you see? I mean, in fact, the two. Everyone says this is like a child show, but I mean, it proved that it is a very mature show.
This is for adults.
Yeah, it's for
this
adults.
This is for adults.
Vecna.
This
clip that and put it out.
Yeah, there you go. There's Stranger Things Part 4. I hope you guys are satisfied. And Winona Ryder, I mean, just still so hot. This question here from Doolin. Last one. We'll take two more. Favorite scene or moments in The Sopranos? Just finished my third rewatch. I love the scene in The Sopranos when Tony is explaining to Syl what Columbus Day actually means. I think that's
so fucking funny.
It's hilarious. You know, the writing in that show is always so smart. But for me, yeah, that's... That's my favorite scene.
I never liked Columbus. I'm like, oh!
Yeah, I think that there's so many great moments to pick from, and a lot of them end up being where, you know, they're talking about these serious issues, and you get some of the moments like that where it's a bit humorous and facetious, but...
When Christopher is like, it's like, well, he did mess up the Native Americans.
They get so offended by that.
They're like, God, what are you talking about, Christopher?
Well, he always had this kind of new age perspective on things. Even though he was just as much of a scumbag as them, he'd be like, well...
The funniest moments in Sopranos is when some of them try to be progressive. And they're still like, when they find out Vito is gay, and Tony's like, you know, maybe if you said something, you know, we could have... Which is hilarious, too, because did you see the news story about the mob band homophobia?
Yes, yeah, I did.
Because one of the mob boss's sons or whatever came out.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of Tony Soprano being like, well, he almost kicked that off. if only Vito said something.
Yeah, calling them the woke mob was pretty funny.
That's actually pretty fun.
Well, the mafia, I mean, obviously.
That's one of the saddest moments, I think, is when Meadow sees Vito with the other man.
Yeah.
And he invites him to a Yankee game, and he's like, fuck, he's gonna kill me because I saw him. And he stands him up, and then they cut to Vito, and he's just standing outside Yankee Stadium waiting for his friend to come see the ball game.
Poor guy.
I'm so upset.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the scenes with Tony and Melfi are great, too. Even, you know, in that episode, when he is talking about his views on homosexuality, I think that one of the best scenes of the show, because it just speaks to the way that the mob culture and his upbringing has made him act a certain way, but deep down, inherently, he is just a decent, normal guy. You know, so it's kind of this nature versus nurture conflict. And the show did that so well with so many of the issues they would tackle. I love the scene when he's talking about what happened to him when he passed out, and his cousin Tony got arrested for the job that he wasn't able to attend because he had that spat with his mother. And that's when the panic attacks first started, and he wasn't able to tell his associates in the mob, I had a fucking panic attack, that's why I missed the job. You know, you had to keep that bottled in for so many years. I mean, James Gandolfini, that lead performance, there's so many great scenes you can pick from, but I think his acting in that moment was the one that always stuck with me. How open he would get with Melfi, and then how upset he would get with Melfi, or upset with himself. You know, they're back and forth. Yeah,
there's one I saw a clip of the other day. It was when... He's like, you gotta get out of town. She's like, what do you mean I gotta get out of town? She's like, I have other patients who are gonna kill the, like, that are suicidal. I was like, well, how do you think they're gonna feel if you're fucking dead?
There's so many great funny ones, too, but when Tony's on the driveway and he's got the orange juice, I said, no pulp. This has pulp. And she just throws the fucking telephone at him. That show did such... It was just such a great family drama at times. You know, aside from all the mafia stuff and the killing, just their interactions as a family of four were great.
Well, it is a great show.
Yeah, it really is. Final question here. I won't put a name to it, but they say that they know that we like to steer from politics, but can you talk about Roe v. Wade?
Mm-hmm.
It's an important issue. So obviously, I think that was 10 days ago, right?
Yeah.
It's not this past Friday, the Friday before that, when that decision came down. I mean, I'll keep my points on this quick. One, I don't think it's an issue that's up for debate. So that would be my stance on it. I think being pro-choice means allowing the woman to make that decision for herself. It's between her, and then it's also the doctor gets a say because he's a doctor or she's a doctor. Part two is just, you know, there's so many different reasons why I have that stance, because I truly don't think people understand this issue in terms of how complex it actually is. You know, when you make such a unilateral decision, there are so many different things that go into that, like certain medications that people take that can be considered abortion medication that has nothing to do with terminating pregnancies. I think rights for privacy, you know, how are you going to be able to track if somebody has an abortion or if somebody helps somebody have an abortion? There are so many different things. It's such a slippery slope that we're heading down when it comes to a decision like this. But I think, you know, at the heart of it, like I said, it's about a woman's choice to do what she wants.
Right.
And I think a lot of people have this perception is you get pregnant and it's 9 months and you're great and your stomach grows and you just pop out a baby and that's it. You know, you're back to being skinny. You're back to work. It can be a traumatic experience for someone to go through pregnancy. That's why a lot of women only have one child because they can't put themselves through it again. So, I mean, we can debate all day long about different things as it pertains to abortion. But for me, it feels beneath me to debate it. It's solved. It shouldn't be an issue. Right, it was.
For a long time. And I think, like you said, I think it's so layered. And there's so many different things that, like, are, I don't want to say bigger than the issue itself, but just can stem from that, from this ruling. And, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm with you. And, like, that happened that day. It was definitely very infuriating. Just seeing, you know, different people. It wasn't even like, I don't know, just like the backlash. Just knowing that so many people are going to be affected by this. And then you have people at celebrating it like it's some fucking giant victory. And like being happy and, yes, we did it. And then you see the other side of people just being like, this is going to affect millions of fucking lives. And, yeah, but like you said, it's just something that has so many different layers that you can go into with the whole religion and government control over women's bodies and just women's rights in general, and then systematically just the people we have in place, the Supreme Court, the obvious bias in there when it comes to religion and political parties, which I think it always seemed like it was the most, like, I don't know, the Supreme Court, like, no bias. They follow, like, they do what's right. Or obviously, that's not the case, but it's just a shame to see just the rampant bias that and kind of political leanings that it has become, because it really is just another section of Republican and Democrat. It's not the Supreme Court anymore.
Definitely.
It's pretty much like every other political structure that we have, and it's a shame to see it that blatant. But
I mean, it was a conservative court that ruled initially on Roe v. Wade. It was a 7-2 decision, a conservative majority that said this is a constitutional right that women should have access to this type of health care. And like, it's more so about healthcare than it is about abortion. That's obviously a huge part of it. But when I say that it's not up for debate, it's because the other side wants all or nothing. We're already seeing that abortion bans, where if the mother's life is in danger, she still has to have that baby. If a woman is a rape victim, we saw in South Dakota, I think it was, or in Ohio, the 10-year-old who was raped and wants to have an abortion, and she had to travel to Indiana. Mm-hmm. So what's the logic behind, you know, like in Florida, don't reveal that you're gay in front of your kids, but a 10-year-old rape victim has to have a child. So it's just hypocritical, and it doesn't, that's why it's not up for debate. What about abortions after this certain time frame, or this or this or this? Because the other side wants it to be permanently banned. Mm-hmm. So there's not, you can't negotiate with a side that's all or nothing. So the pro-choice side needs to be all or nothing as well. So I'm so sick of moderates trying to, like, oh, let's work this out. No, there is nothing to work out here.
Well, especially since one side has just been bashing the other over the head recently, it seems like, because it just seems like, obviously, I think Republicans have been controlling every fucking narrative at every turn, and it's honestly embarrassing seeing the way the Democrats have responded and basically just taking it. And
lousy fighters, and they need to realize that their party, if they're going to run on the platform when most of their party doesn't necessarily support it, mm-hmm. they need to be open about that, because you're going to lose voters and you're going to let an extremist party just do whatever the fuck they want.
That's the hard.
So it's a weird time in American politics.
That's why I can't argue politics with people, especially people who are on the other side of me. You know, you run into people, family, whatever, who have different opinions and whatever. But like when they always go to the argument, so it's like, oh, so you like Biden? And it's so hard to do that when I'm like, no, or like this politician or these things that are in place. I'm like, I hate it all.
But Democrats get frustrated with that as well. Yeah. They want their base to be sycophants like the other side is.
Yeah.
That you agree with Biden no matter what he does, that you always vote Democrat. And they need to look themselves in the mirror. The platform of vote for us in presidential elections so we can support nominate Supreme Court justices instead of passing legislation hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. It's blown up in their face, and they're doing the same thing once again. You got to vote. But every time they come into power, they're not able to galvanize. They're not able to whip votes. So they need to look themselves in the mirror. If you're a party that's dominating general elections for the last 3 decades, and yet the other side has occupied the executive branch for 12 years out of those 30 years while only winning one popular vote, then you're not fighting hard enough to change the system. Democrats have majority support on all of these issues. They just don't fight hard enough. Mm-hmm. It's not about convincing the friend down the block or your neighbor or somebody at the bar. That doesn't matter to me, because when you get most Americans in a room, they seem to have a consensus view on most major issues. Like I said, it's just it's a tough time, and it sucks for all the women who are going to lose this basic fundamental right. They've been losing it for years now anyway, because abortion rights have been eroding. They've been chipping away.
One thing's dangerous too, because
it feels like it's at a breaking point.
Especially when it's like, well, we're not, you know, we're just leaving it up to the states. Okay, but like you said, if a group of states in the same region are against it, then you're creating just a bunch of problems. And, you know, definitely more leaning towards people who don't have the means to maybe travel or go find a doctor. And I think it's clear, and a lot of people have made this point, that abortion's not going to go away. It's just going to be harder, more expensive, and more dangerous, potentially. So, like, you're creating an issue. You're just making it harder all around to solve a problem that is not really there, unless your book that says it is.
Well said. Yeah, I think it was well said. And, you know, I think that, like the person who asked the question said, we steer away from politics because this is not a political channel. You know, we're here to talk about movies and TVs. Sometimes politics and entertainment obviously cross over, and we're forced to talk about, not forced, because I'll gladly talk about an issue if, you know, we always talk about some of the, like with Reva and the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. I wasn't shying away from that whatsoever. If people want to say, oh, you think you're calling all Star Wars fans racist, if you want to take it that way, fine. I don't give a fuck. And it's the same thing with this discussion. You know, if you want to take it a certain way, if you want to believe that, you know, I'm no longer legitimate to talk about anything, then whatever. I don't care. But
no,
if the political landscape is going to be just this explicit, it's impossible to ignore.
Yeah. And I think that, obviously, at the end of the day, when we talk about Star Wars or Game of Thrones, like, it's crazy how, like, obviously, it's just so inconsequential, or it doesn't matter compared to real life issues. But, you know, it's kind of funny that, like, people get just as worked up about that as it is actual issues that are actually happening right now. So,
yeah, I mean, I've had people unfollow me and tell me I'm stupid because I didn't like a movie that they liked, which has nothing to do with politics. So I think, right. With politics, they are so divisive. So naturally people are going to.
So at the end of the day, I don't think we talk about it because it's like we don't think, well, we don't want people to unfollow us if they knew, which I think you should know where we stand at this point. But like, it's like, no, we don't really care about that because people unfollow us because we like Marvel instead of DC.
Yeah, at this point it doesn't matter.
So it's just like, yeah, and like you said, it's just so in our world, and they cross over so, like, at times where it's just like, yeah, on certain things that are just this big, it's like, well, yeah, you got to kind of talk about it, or it's just like the elephant in the room, or it's just so intertwined with what it is that we're talking about that, like, you can't just ignore it on certain issues.
Yeah, and people will say, oh, they're doing this for brownie points. You know, they're preaching to the choir. But, I mean, slide into my DMs if you want to have a political conversation, because I'm the same on this podcast as I am in private. I've always been like this. Yeah. So,
I mean, if it was up to me, I wish we were conservatives because, like, those get the clicks.
All right, guys, that is a Nerd Soup podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening.
You know how much views the woke Disney haters get?
Oh, yeah, those thumbnails are... It's all about the thumbnails. You put Mickey in the thumbnail with, like, the Iron Sickle?
Yeah.
Right.
Throwing Captain Marvel.
They're coming for your kids.
Throwing Captain Marvel, you can get millions of views.
Captain Marvel with the Hitler mustache, yeah. All that stuff. Are you trying to envision that?
You know?
You think Brie could pull that off?
The mustache?
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. For Aaron the Nerd Soup Monkey, I am Bo Oliver. We will be back next week. Hopefully, I can get Nash and Teddy on for that one, because you'll be in Greece. But I should be back. Yeah, I'm going to Miami for a little bit.
Hell yeah. Want to switch?
I would love to go to Greece, man. You're going to love Greece.
I know.
It's a nice place to go.
I like history. I do like places with a lot of history.
Yeah,
it's a shame, though, because a lot of it is in ruins. You know, they didn't really do a good job of upkeeping. you know, wars.
But you can look
stuff.
At the ruins and say, oh, man, that's cool, too. I mean, it's devastating what's happened in some of the places in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Like, there are areas in Syria where in the Uncharted games you go and visit some of those landmarks, and now they're just, they don't exist because of the Syrian civil war. And, you know, obviously the what's happened in Syria is horrible, but that's just another aspect of it that's also terrible. The lack of preservation for history.
Yeah, there's so much. Like, even when you talk about books and libraries and just different times in history where they just disregarded a lot of these things, where imagine if not only the architecture and all these monuments, but, like, actual history.
Right, right, yeah.
Written down and things like that, so.
Human beings are funny creatures.
Yeah, I'm gonna...
Bunch of crazy hairless monkeys.
So Greece is, like... It's one of the, you know, when you think of
one of the landmark movies of the 80s.
Civilizations.
Right.
Greece is up there. It's a naturally beautiful. We're going to some islands, so like.
Yeah, you're going to Mykonos, right?
No, Catalonia.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Athens, and yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to Supercon in Miami.
First time in Europe.
Look at that.
I have a layover in Switzerland.
That counts.
Have I been to Switzerland?
Yeah, you've been to Switzerland.
Hell yeah. Not yet, but. Both our flights are going to get canceled.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm so worried about that. That would fucking suck. Alright guys, thanks for listening. See ya.
Damn, we were making some good points in that video. Hey guys, Aaron the Nerd Suit Monkey here. Before we end this video, I want to give a quick shout out to our Patreon supporters. What can I say about you guys that I haven't already said about myself? You are the most important part of the channel and the main reason we keep going strong. Like Bo says, you keep the lights on in the fridge, so the fridge is full. Or something like that. So, from everyone here at Nerd Soup, I'd like to thank you guys for your continued support. If you're interested in joining the ranks of our Patreon supporters, head over to patreon.com/nerdsoup and check out the rewards we offer to our patrons. We recently dropped some new stickers for you guys to check out, or you could choose a tier that will allow you to select a movie, show, or video game for us to review. We've got a full slate of fan-suggested reviews coming your way, and we're really excited about the chance to review some of those movies and shows. We've also got t-shirts, mugs, behind-the-scenes videos showing how we bring our videos to life. And once again, thank you to all our Patreon pledgers who have been supporting us throughout the years. Without you, we wouldn't be able to convert all your pledges into cryptocurrency, so thank you from my future self for making us rich.